In this hour of the show, we welcome back Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with University of Illinois and is the guy that every once in a while we call to come and help you out with household insect pest questions. These can be things that are inside the house or in the home landscape and garden. And if you have some kind of problem, all you need to do is call in here and talk with Phil, and he can tell you how to deal with it. Sometimes we talk about how to get rid of stuff. Occasionally he suggests people think about coexistence if that's possible, but if it's a real problem and you want to get rid of it, we can tell you how to do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you can call and ask questions. Thanks for being with us again.
Glad to be here.
I think this is first time this year, isn't it?
I believe so. Yes, it is.
And it's been a pretty good year so far for insects. We were talking about how it's dry enough, so we haven't really seen a lot of mosquitoes. That's okay. But warm so that there's lots and lots of insect activity going on.
Yeah, well, insects are cold-blooded animals, and they really don't develop in moving from hatching from eggs, et cetera, until the temperature is around 50 degrees or higher. And so associated with that, that's why you don't see insects coming out in the middle of winter, et cetera. Normally in the spring, we're going to have some cool temperatures that over the last 3 weeks or so, when we've been having a lot of highs in the mid-80s, we would normally have highs in the mid to high 60s. We get into what we call degree days, which with insects development, we talk about of number of degree days or amount of temperature it gets above 50 degrees as a base temperature or something close to that. And normally we would be picking up a decent number of degree days, but when the temperatures are 15, 20 degrees higher than they normally are, then the degree days go crazy. Result has been that insects are now out and are making themselves known that we would normally not have until the latter part of May. I know last night I was watching Illinois Gardener on WIL TV, and she mentioned that, you know, peonies are in bloom. It looks like we're 2 weeks ahead of schedule, and I would concur with that. From the bugs that are coming out, I'd say we're looking at 2 weeks ahead of schedule. In addition to that, insects, a major thing that kills insects are fungus diseases. There are fungus diseases that attack plants, and there are other fungi that attack insects. And fungi do better under cooler, damp conditions. So hot, dry conditions reduces the number of fungus diseases that attack insects, which allow more insects to survive than normally would survive. And so we're seeing insects on plants outside just all over the place. The hot, dry weather does also speed up the development and the survivability of predatory and predaceous insects that parasitic insects that would attack these insect pests. But right now, it seems like the ones that are eating what we're interested in are kind of ahead of the game right now.
We have a couple people here ready to go with questions, so let's start. And the first caller is in Terre Haute, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. We have a problem with water bugs, the roaches that live outside and then come in to visit from time to time.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything that can be done about that other than having somebody spray?
There's a couple things. The water bug, or oriental cockroach, is about an inch long and very dark brown, looks almost black. They will live along the foundation, right up against the foundation, even in the wintertime, and will come in and out. They need a high humidity and moisture, and normally they're most numerous in the basement and then will come up on the outside of water and drain pipes up in the living parts of the house. You can help stop that migration upstairs by caulking the space in around where the pipe comes in through the wall or the floor. The hole is called a pipe chase, and usually there's a bigger space, at least roach space, around that pipe. And if you fill that hole up around that pipe as best you can with anything that fills a hole, old socks work great for this, but you can use caulking compound, you can use steel wool, you can use anything you want, but roaches have pretty poor mouth parts, and so they're not going to be able to chew through much of anything. But fill in those holes, cracks and crevices, that will help reduce the problem a lot. If you have a damp basement, reducing humidity there will make a big difference, running a dehumidifier or making sure you have plenty of movement of air. And then the oriental cockroach or water bug will also live out around the outside foundation of your house and likes to feed on dead organic matter. So if you've got accumulations of fallen leaves or bark mulch next to the foundation, removing that will greatly reduce the number that live outside, and this will reduce the number that come inside. There are also insecticides, baits, and so on that you can buy that are set on the container for large roaches. You need to put those in areas where you tend to see the roaches, along cracks and crevices, and this will help reduce the numbers. Realize that it can take a while to get rid of water bugs because this is a long-lived roach. It takes a year for it to grow up, whereas most roaches take about 3 months, and then it will live for a year or more after it's an adult. So you can, many times you have to work on controlling oriental cockroaches or water bugs for a couple years before you, it's usually at least a year and sometimes 2 years before you see a major reduction in the number of roaches.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. Coming back here locally, the next is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. I'm wondering how soon do we expect Japanese beetles, and when they come, what do we do about them?
Well, we normally expect Japanese beetles to show up the last week in June in central Illinois, a few days later farther north, a few days earlier farther south. And we're assuming that we're going to have some normal temperatures yet. If these temperatures hold the way they have been, we may have a Japanese beetles out in early June. But typically what happens is we will have some cooler temperatures to balance out the warmth we've been having. And they probably will come out around the latter part of June. We recommend that when they come out and start feeding on your plants, that if you can remove those, hand removal is useful, particularly when they first come out. It appears that a Japanese beetle likes to feed where another Japanese beetle has fed, and they will change what they feed on every couple of days. So if you can reduce the amount of feeding early, you reduce the attraction of your plants to additional feeding later. So going out in the when you've got a chance, they're out there during all day and night, but most of the time in the warmer, sunny times are the best times. Have a jar with some rubbing alcohol or some soapy water in it. Kind of hold it underneath a bug, the beetle, bob it a little bit, and he responds by curling his legs in and dropping off a plant. If you got the bottle underneath, jar underneath him, will fall right into the drink and die. You can harvest these. I call it harvesting. You're not going to get rid of every one of them, but you can harvest these on a daily or every other day basis. It's a form of leisure time activity for a homeowner, and this will greatly reduce the number that you've got and the number that you'll have all season. Even if you can only do it for a week or two, starting early is going to give you more benefit than later. Otherwise, if you've got plants that are roses, lindens, crab apples, willows, other trees are very heavily attacked, and they, particularly if they're near your front entryways and so on, you can spray those with carbaryl, which is SOTA-7 insecticide, or also cyflufrin, which is what's put out by Bayer rose and flower killer. These materials will last for about 2 weeks, or even a little bit more than that. When the beetles start to show up again, you could repeat the process. We don't recommend that you try to spray everything in your yard. That gets to be too much insecticide being used and too much cost of insecticide and so on. We recommend that you just protect the plants that are, you know, very obvious to you, and people would come to visit your place very often, like things out in the front yard next to the door, that sort of thing. If you got a crab apple that's back there in the backyard and its main function is to hide the garbage can, don't worry about spraying it. It's not going to hurt it any. It's not going to cause it to die or anything like that, having the beetles feed on it. But there's no need to spray it. You're not going to greatly reduce the problem next year or anything of that nature.
Well, what was that first one you mentioned?
Carbaryl, which is sold as 7, S-E-V-I-N.
Oh, 7.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. And of those, which do you think is maybe the least toxic?
Neither of them are real highly toxic. Neither of them are real low in toxicity. They're somewhat median in toxicity. You need to be careful when you're using them, but we're not talking about things that are deadly either. So, realize that that 7 is in many flea and tick powders that you put on by hand on your dog or cat. So, and the Bayer product is similar in toxicity. So, you know, we're not talking about things that are really toxic, but on the other hand, you don't eat what's in the flea can either.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks for the call. We are talking this morning with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at University of Illinois and occasionally is here to help with problems of insect pests. If you have problem in the house, can be also in the home, garden, or landscape. You can just call us and tell us about the problem, and Phil will suggest a solution. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Crete, and it's line 4.
Yes, I was wondering, besides cleaning up around the foundation, if you poured, say, boric acid around the house or mothballs around the house every 2 or 3 weeks, would that be effective?
Boric acid is an effective roach control material, and I thought about it just as I finished with that caller. But boric acid, to be effective, needs to stay dry. It usually comes as a dry powder. You can buy it as roach proof or roach powder. And put in areas where it would stay dry, such as around the pipe chases, areas around cracks and crevices upstairs. If a basement tends to be relatively dry, in cracks and crevices down there would be effective. But outdoors, where you're going to get moisture coming in contact with it, it's not going to really stay very effective. Moth crystals are really only effective in confined spaces. And so out in the open like that, it's not going. All you're going to do is notice that it smells bad around the house. You're probably not going to make much difference to the roaches.
Well, when you call an exterminating company to come uh-huh. in and do some work, how do you know that they're not bringing some chemicals in that might kill your cats?
Well, in the first place, chemicals that are used inside houses are ones that you're going to have to live with, and if it doesn't kill you, it's not likely to kill the cat. These are all tested, and the whole battery of tests are looked at. The US EPA looks over the results of these tests, and so they're not applying materials inside our houses that are really a major problem to anybody. They've been thoroughly tested, probably tested as much as about as much as the medicines that you get from your physician. So, you know, they are heavily tested. They are thoroughly tested. You read reports where it says, well, we don't know anything about them. That's just plain false. We know a lot about these chemicals, probably as much as we do anything.
And the same thing would apply to their chemicals as to boric acid and mothballs. If they did try to do something outside with their chemicals, the rain would dissipate it within a few days.
Well, there are some. One can use applications of along the foundation of materials. Homeowners can do it. So can people that are hired. They normally last for about a month out there. But what you end up doing is that you end up applying pesticide around the entire foundation on essentially a monthly basis during the warmer season of the year. You're looking at 6 or 8 applications. The recommendation I made to the individual involved was using baits, which would in specific places inside where the roaches tend to be found, which greatly reduce the amount of chemical actually being applied. Although you're using it indoors where people are actually living, it's low in volatility and tends to be low in toxicity to people. And I felt that was a better trade-off for in something that's coming inside anyway. Bait it with a little bit of chemical indoors rather than a lot of it out around the outside foundation.
And if you're using something outside, what would you recommend?
Normally, we recommend applications around the foundation of permethrin.
Permethrin.
Or one can still use diazinon or dursban, although those are coming off the market at the end of this year.
Okay, thank you.
All right, on to another caller here. This would be line number 2 in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Recently, I've had a couple beetles come into my apartment. I live in a basement apartment. I've been there 2 years and have had no trouble with insects whatsoever, except last fall a few earwigs began coming in, and they stopped, and I was advised by possibly you. I called the university.
Could you describe the beetle, sir?
The one beetle that really concerns me, I've seen one of each only.
And okay.
Not exactly overrun, but I have a very large number, I have a large library, and I'm concerned because in the past I've had dermestids, carpet beetle type animals that are completely ruined collections of dried plants and insect collections.
Okay, and what are the beetles looking like?
This one kind of the larger type looks like it might be a Dermestid. It's jet black, however.
How long is it, about a quarter of an inch?
It's about almost a quarter of an inch, yes.
Okay.
And it's elliptical and rather high, so to speak. It's humped up high like a ladybird beetle or something.
Okay.
It has very short legs and antennae, and the one I picked up was relatively docile. You know, it didn't struggle or anything.
Yeah.
And I tossed it into a plastic cup of which it couldn't climb out of.
Yeah, if it had kind of a broad snout on the front of it, it would, or an elongated snout, it was probably a black vine weevil.
It's
it would have
not
light
a weevil.
Spots.
It's
okay.
Not a weevil, if that's
then it could be a Dermestid. Ones of that size are going to be feeding on meat rather than wool or anything of that nature. These would be in the genus Dermestes, and they will feed on dry dog or cat food, jerky, country-cured hams, dead mice or birds in the wall void or on the fireplace damper, but are not a threat to pretty much anything we're really interested in inside our house.
Well, paper goods.
No, they're not going to harm paper goods.
That's very good news. And the other one was much smaller, the size of a small ant. And I can't remember. I think I picked it up and then just barely was able to because it was so small between my fingers. And before I could drop it into anything, it apparently had dropped out of my fingers. And I only saw it for a short time. It's about 3 millimeters long, very small.
Yeah, if it was very roundish in shape.
No, it wasn't. It's elongated.
Okay. The Dermestids, the carpet beetles that will come in and could cause damage are going to be very roundish in shape.
Yeah, that's the first one. This one, I don't think. I've had some training in entomology. I have a PhD in biology, and I had a full big course in entomology. And I know it's not a Dermestid.
Yeah, if it's more elongated, maybe one of the pantry beetles. If you see more of them, you might want to start checking. If you have dry dog or cat food, it could be in that. It could also be in cake mixes, oatmeal, cornmeal, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Check for that sort of thing. Many of the small beetles that are elongated are going to be cigarette beetles or sawtooth grain beetles or merchant grain beetles. These are all grain-feeding insects. But if you have them, you're not going to have just one. One that just may have been attracted lights at night and came into the house.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, thank you.
Goodbye.
We'll just keep going on. Next person in line is in Joliet. This is line number 3.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a home that I've just built on in southern Indiana. And I find that my son calls them wood borers.
Okay.
And they're a flying insect. They look exactly like a bee. And they sound exactly like a bee, a bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
But they attack eaves. And the whole house is cedar. And now they're starting to bore into the cedar. And I'm wondering what I can do to control that.
Probably what these are carpenter bees. They'll look like a bumblebee. They'll be about an inch across or half to an inch across, and they'll be very rotund and hairy looking. They're different from a bumblebee in that there is no yellow on the abdomen. All the yellow will just be on the thorax, whereas bumblebees will have a little bit of yellow on the abdomen. These insects will make holes that are about a half an inch in diameter into the wood. Then they'll turn 90 degrees and go up the piece of wood as much as 2 feet. And they will pack cells with pollen, lay eggs in them, and sometime later in the summer, the young will emerge as adults. Normally, they're not going to attack painted or varnished wood. Usually, they're less apt to attack cedar than they are other unfinished wood, but the long-term answer may be to put some sort of compatible colored paint on that wood or some sort of a polyurethane. Will allow your cedar to show through, but still give you more protection than just staining will give to that wood.
Okay. What I've done is I've got a clear sealer on.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole house is now done.
Okay.
And it's a little late to varnish or to do anything else to the outside. I was hoping that I might be able to spray something on the outside of the house that would keep them away from the wood.
We would not recommend any whole house sprays, but if you have where you have holes, you can use carbaryl or 7-Dust into that opening. And this will kill the insects as they try to come out or as the female's still working. One thing that some people make a mistake at is that they close up that hole that insect has made. Well, if they don't close it up, then all of the young that are coming out will come out that same hole. They'll come out in rank file and just come right out of that hole. And if you've got 7 in it, you can kill them, or even if they're not going to bother you till next year anyway. If you caulk that hole, sometimes each individual adult bee as it comes out then needs to come out and will make its own hole, and so instead of having one hole, you now have 10 to 20 holes.
Oh.
You have to think that if the insect was able to make a hole into it, obviously its kids can make a hole to get out, and they may make many much more damage than they would have if you left it alone.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right. Your answer.
We are already at the midpoint here with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with the University of Illinois, and we're offering you an opportunity to call in here if you have problems with insect pests in the home. We can tell you what to do about it. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll free 800-222-9455. Next in line is Aurora, line number 1.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Hi.
Just in time, I have an insect that I usually don't have insects in my garden, but this is on a mint plant. It's about an eighth of an inch long. It's somewhat pear-shaped with orange. It seems to be an orange-red color,
mm-hmm.
very bright, with a black band across the middle of it.
Yeah, you're looking at four-lined plant bug. Four-lined plant bug. What these will do is this is the nymphal stage, and they will come out in the later in the spring, probably in early summer. They'll emerge into quarter-inch long, flat-topped bugs that'll be yellow with four black stripes or lines down the back. And they both the nymph and the adult feed by sucking on juices out of the mint, and what you'll get are blackish areas on the mint, and the leaves will be.
That was the next thing I was going to tell
will
you.
Will be
the
puckered. Yeah,
it's all black.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to rid of it?
Well, unfortunately, there's very little can be done except using an insecticide to control that I'm aware of. And there are very few things that are labeled to be used on herbs, so mint and other herbs. Probably about the only thing that you can use is try to hit the insects with insecticidal soap. And
I used that last night.
You would probably have to do it, I would anticipate, maybe every couple, 3 days for two or three applications in order to really knock down the numbers. But doing it now while they're still in the nymphal stage is the best time to do it, even though they're hidden down in against the base of the leaves and so on. Because once they get older and are able to fly, they'll fly away when you go out to spray and then fly back when you're done spraying. The insecticidal soap has no residual control. And and then, of course, when you go to use a mint, rinse it off well before you use it because...
No, I think I'll just...
Because soap can...
I think I'll just dispose of the plant. It's not that important.
Well, you can do that, or what you'll find out is if you do get control of the insects, you will, after a couple of free sprays, you will see the new growth will be fine and will not be affected, and you certainly can use that material. That will be attractive to be used in whatever you want to use the mint for.
I have a tree that is losing its bark due to some insect being on it, which I don't know what it is, but there's debris like sawdust at the bottom of the tree. And I tried once to have somebody come and look at it, but I couldn't get anybody to come and do whatever it needed to done. And to try to do something now myself, what could I put on it?
Okay, do you know what kind of tree it is?
Oh, it's a choke cherry.
Okay. There's nothing that normally will attack wild black cherry directly. However, what we can look at is... You may be looking at carpenter ants that are in it. If it's a fairly large tree, it may have some rot inside the tree. And you can also get some frost cracking, particularly on the south and west sides of the tree. It will loosen the bark and allow the ants to get in. They do not harm the tree directly. They are hollowing out the wood in the internal part of a tree that the tree is only using for support, and usually they don't do enough hollowing out that it really weakens the tree substantially. You could use use diazinon or into that area to kill off the nest, but you probably just get another nest in there. My suggestion is not to worry too much about it. If the
Yeah, but the reason I'm worried, I've lost three trees this spring, and this is my fourth tree.
Well, this one will not kill the tree.
Really?
No. The but if a tree is close enough,
it's unsightly. I can't believe that it won't ruin the tree.
Are you seeing any dieback of a tree?
No.
No, I wouldn't expect you to. All you should be seeing is a hole with sawdust to base the tree, and maybe and the bark may be popping out associated with some frost injury. But what we would recommend is if that tree is close enough, that should it fall over, it could fall on your house, a building, you know, a car, something like that. You might want to have an arborist come out and check it, and make sure that it's safe, even though it has the carpenter ants in it.
Is that who I would get, an arborist?
I'm sorry?
Is that who I would get?
Yes, an arborist, and that will be.
And he told me he doesn't spray them.
Yeah, but he can check to make sure that the tree is safe.
Okay, fine.
That it's not weakened enough from this tunneling on the inside of a tree that it might blow over in a storm and cause some damage to something.
Yeah, and that's what I've had.
And that's what you need to be careful about. The insect itself will not cause the death of a tree, and you'll get enough. Many times a tree will have enough wood around the outside of this injury, of this feeding on the inside, that it is still very strong. You know, a cylinder can be about as strong as a solid core rod. So. You know, strength-wise, there may be enough good wood there, and it may not need to be removed. But that would be the only reason you'd have a problem with carpenter ants. And they're only in there because
carpenter ants.
Yes, it would be carpenter ants in all likelihood.
If I
you should
diazinon,
be
diazinon. It would help.
Diazinon would kill off the ants. However, the ants would only be in there because you had the inside of that tree rotting already, which means the inside of that tree may be weakened already, and it may be susceptible to falling over whether or not you do anything about the carpenter ants. And you should have it checked.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Thanks for the call. And also, there's a possibility, as you said, that if you did have carpenter ants, you could get rid of those ants. But if it was a place that would be good for carpenter ants, it could be some other. You could kill that bunch of ants, but another bunch of ants would come along and say, "Hey, great place for
the
us."
The old idea:
move
nature
right
loves
in.
A vacuum. You kill off where insects have been able to do well. You've left a space for when that insecticide breaks down. The other ones will move right in.
Okay.
So you know that's not a long-term answer.
All right. We have some other folks here, a couple of Urbana people. Next is line number two in Urbana. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Hi, actually, I have a spider question.
Okay.
We've got wolf spiders of different sizes and varieties in our window casings and outside around the foundation and increasingly in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything from the little teeny ones that can fit through the screens up to big ones with, you know, if you count the legs, like 2 inches in diameter.
Uh-huh.
What do we do about these things?
Wolf spiders primarily live in debris. They are some of our biggest spiders, and they'll get up to 2 inches across the leg span. They move rapidly. They don't live in webs. They run down their prey like a wolf does. They normally will come in through cracks and crevices around the foundation, openings there, and they will build up by feeding on insect. They need moist areas, so they'll live well in fallen leaves or bark mulch or this sort of material, decaying plant material next to the foundation outside. And they'll feed on insects and other small creatures that feed on some of that mold and mildew associated with those breakdown products. And so reducing the amount of dead organic matter, fallen leaves, bark mulch next to the foundation, removing that will help reduce greatly the number of spiders right next to the foundation. This helps reduce the number that come in. Sometimes spiders are more common around the outside windows if there's a light there, and so positioning lights that you might want to have for security on poles or out away so that the light shines towards the door rather than from the doorway or from that area will greatly reduce the number of spiders, not only these kind, but orb-weaving spiders, the ones that make the big webs.
Right.
You know, the old idea, if you attract the bugs, then the spiders will come to eat them. So,
yeah.
These are all things that can help, but generally caulking cracks and crevices to keep them out of the indoors will help. They also will be more numerous if the humidity is higher, so making sure your basement is not real humid during the summertime or the winter will help reduce the number of spiders you have indoors generally.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. Another Urbana person here, line three. Hello.
Hi. I hope I'm not repeating. I just tuned in.
That's fine.
I've had ants in the lower story of my bi-level all winter, and I tried putting diazinon around the outside just a week ago, and, of course, there's been no change. What do you recommend I do?
I would recommend ant baits. There's a couple different kinds that are out there. One would be a protein ant bait or for so-called grease ants, and this
Would you tell Seth I'll call him back? Sorry, go
probably
on.
The most effective ant bait is going to be combat ant bait, and it'll be available in grocery stores, hardware stores, et cetera. For sweet-feeding ants, then either Taro or Grant's ant bait is probably going to be the most effective.
You're the little tiny kind.
Well, the little tiny kind can be...
Either one.
Yeah, and in fact, the same colony of ant can change what it likes to eat over the span of a year. But baiting for the ants will help reduce the problem. If you do some renovation, try to make sure you caulk cracks and crevices in a bi-level house because you have two sets of concrete or foundation there, one of them deeper than the other. As the land moves, it's almost impossible to keep that juncture between the lower and upper levels of a bi-level sealed. So that crack occurs almost immediately, and that allows ants and all sorts of things to come into the house that way.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And to Downs for somebody else right here on our line four. Hello.
Hi. I've got two questions. One is that I have a dogwood tree that has got a lot of damage this winter. It was eaten by deer and its bark was eaten by rabbits, and now it seems to be being attacked by some little bug that I can't see, but it's boring into the trunk and leaving a little bit of frass coming out, but it seems to even come out as like a little rod, but I
okay.
can knock it right off.
Okay.
But it will come out like an eighth of an inch.
Okay.
In a straight little line, and then I can knock it right off. Is there anything I can do to save this poor tree?
This is likely to be dogwood borer, and... that sounds like I really made that up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
dogwood borer is what we call a clear wing moth, and if my memory serves me right, this isn't a question I get very often. My memory serves me right, we're coming up to latter part of May. You would spray the trunk of that tree, and then probably about 2 weeks later, with permethrin will work well. You can also use Dursban if you still have some of that around or want to use that.
Tell me the first one again.
Was permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N. And you just have to look on the active ingredient part of pest insecticides, and it will have the word permethrin, something that's labeled for borer use. It will say for borers.
Okay.
And this usually done way early as the spring is, I'd say right about now, actually,
okay.
And then about 2 weeks from now. Maybe again 2 weeks after that to be on the safe side.
Okay.
Spray the tree, and this will help reduce the problem. To help keep the rabbits and deer away from it, you want to get a rabbit and deer repellent that contains thyram. That'll be spelled T-H-I-R-A-M. T-H-I-R-A-M.
Okay.
And the thyram is applied after it gets cold, usually between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Okay.
And then repeat the process when you get some warm temperatures and anywhere from late January to late February, and that will carry it through the winter.
Great.
These are repellents that will repel the rabbit or deer away from that tree so they'll go feed on another tree. You're not going to get any help by spraying every tree in the place because... You know, they have to have something to eat, too, and they'll feed on
right.
bark and twigs
right.
during the wintertime to keep themselves alive.
They can eat. You know, there's lots of stuff here they can eat.
Yeah, you protect what's really important to you and don't worry about them feeding on some other things. At the very least, you're trying to get them to go over and eat what your neighbor has. but it is a repellent, and they have to have somewhere else to go.
Okay, so you do not only insects.
Oh, yeah, we'll cover that other stuff, too, if we can, if I know the answer.
I think
that should help. Realize that when you get borers into a dogwood, you may be reaching the point of no return on the tree.
Well, it's been so damaged already, I think that probably the borers are there because the tree is very weak.
But it's perhaps worth a try, but don't get... don't be too surprised. Sometimes the patient's beyond saving by the time you get borers into it.
Right. Do we have time for one more?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. What can I do about the kind of the black ants that are in my garden that create great mounds of dirt?
The way I normally handle black ant or ants of any type that make a mound in my garden is I try not to plant a plant right where that mound is because it will loosen the soil.
They come into the mound. I mean they come into the plant.
Okay.
And they seem to be the kind that are farming aphids too.
Okay.
I really
well, usually the ones that farm the aphids tend to be more yellowish ants in this part of the country.
Black ones that are just,
but at any rate, you can treat individual mounds with diazinon, and this will kill off the anthill. We normally don't recommend that. Normally we would recommend primarily just trying to work around the ants.
They move, but then they leave this huge.
Yeah, they will.
Mountain.
Try to make sure that if you get aphids on your plants, use an insecticidal soap. We'll kill the aphids off if they're starting to build up, because the ants will defend the aphids from predators and parasites that would take out the aphids on their own.
Right.
But we usually don't recommend attacking the ants directly. California has a lot of Argentine ant, and they get all bent out of shape, and you read things about how to control them, putting Vaseline and stuff like that at the base of the plant. That works on woody plants, but it doesn't work on herbaceous material like you're going to have in a garden. So,
my real problem is that they just suddenly will make this huge mound in the middle of my garden, and
How huge are we looking at? Inches across?
Huh?
Are we talking about a foot across, or are we talking about a couple inches or 3 inches?
Yeah, maybe a foot across.
Well, if you do have one of those, then treating directly into the mound may help. You'll get other ants back in, but it shouldn't make such an obnoxious mound that reduces as much of your garden space.
They seem to be. I've tried to kill them with various things, and they seem to be. They seem to seal off, and it will kill some of them, but then they're still there.
Yeah, normally the way you would take out an anthill like that would be that you'd shovel out a shovel full of soil, opening up the mound into some of the tunnels, and then you'd apply the insecticide down into those tunnels.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You've been very, very helpful.
Okay.
Thanks.
We've got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist with the University of Illinois and is here occasionally to help with household insect pests or sometimes other kinds of pest problems. All you have to do, you got a question, give us a call, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Just going back to one of the discussions you had with a caller about the ant issue and what kind of baits work, so there's no easy way that the average person could look at an ant and tell, is this one of those ants that likes the greasy stuff or one of those ants that likes the sweet stuff?
There's 90 different species of ants in Illinois, and I can't even just look at the ant and tell what it would be. The other thing that occurs is that an ant colony goes through various stages of what it's doing. The adult ants feed primarily on sweet materials, and they'll go after nectar, and they'll go after the jelly on your sandwich, and they'll go after the so-called sweet baits. However, if the ant colony at that particular time, and if the ant colony at that particular time of year that's in your house has a lot of adults and very little brood, that is larvae, then that's what they're going to go after generally as a colony. On the other hand, if it happens to be a time when they're building up the number of ants in the colony, and they've got a lot of brood, a lot of larvae. The larvae are predaceous primarily. They're feeding on meat and materials of that nature. That a large number of larvae will cause the same colony to then start looking for protein, i.e. grease. And so they will start going after what we call protein baits, such as a combat bait. So on the span of a week or 10 days, an ant colony can completely change what it's interested in and what kind of bait it will go to in a house. So not only can you not even look at the ant and tell what it's going to eat, you got to know what time of year it is and then also know what that particular colony is doing, which can vary depending on the colony and what its sources of food are. So you can actually, we get people occasionally to call in and they'll say, well, I put out a bait and it worked for 2 days and all of a sudden they're still there, but they're not going to the bait. Well, the colony switched what they're interested in. They didn't get enough bait to kill off the nest. There's a change in the amount of brood development and so on in the colony, where now the colony's looking for a different source of food.
Yeah, so you may have to try both.
Yeah.
Just
you try one, really, and that's more at least
more economical, and then if that doesn't work, you try the other type
of
thing.
All right. Very good. Well, let's get back here to callers in Champaign. Next, line number one. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
Enjoying your program. What about these gadgets you plug into the wall that are supposed to keep mice away and kill bugs?
Save your money.
Save my money.
Save your money. There are various materials that are out there. In the 60s, they had a bunch of things that put out magnetism that supposedly kept away insects and rodents and so on. Those were shown to be totally a sham. In the late 70s, early 80s, there were ultrasonic devices that were put out, and they found out that those were also not effective. Recently, there's been some things that say, well, they cause a pulse through the wiring that makes a difference. I haven't seen any real definite evidence on it, but what I know about insects, considering that people have problems with insects inside factories with pulses and electronic charges all over the place, I don't think that's really going to make much difference either. The ultrasonic devices will repel rats. Mice learn to live with them. The important thing with ultrasonic waves is that they are very directional. They don't go around corners. So in a typical house, you'd have to have so many of them that it would be almost impossible. And, in fact, insects aren't really bothered by those any more than we are. So that's why I say save your money. Most states do not have any laws that keep you from selling something that doesn't work. They keep you from selling chemicals that don't work, but there's nothing that keeps you from selling a device that doesn't work. And so I know that the U.S. Postal Service has been going after some of these people for mail fraud. They can go after them that way. But all that happens is they just show up somewhere else, out of another garage somewhere else. So even if some of these places will have are done in fairly reputable catalogs and so on, but the research over and over and over and over again shows they don't work.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, very good.
Bye.
Next is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd like to ask, please, about carpenter bees.
Uh-huh.
We have a carport and a structure in the backyard that are made out of cedar, and the cedar structure in the backyard is new. The other one has been there for a lot longer, and it has maybe 10 years of returning carpenter mm-hmm. bees that don't sting, I'm told, but they
well, they can if you handle them.
Well,
if you handle the bees, they will sting. They're very unlikely to sting. Normally, we would recommend if you can put a paint or a varnish or polyurethane on the wood, that usually makes them less attractive in the future. That's a way of prevention. Holes that are open, you can put carbaryl, which is sold as 7 dust, into the opening, and this will kill off the bees. But for long-term answer, you may want to put some sort of a, if you want like the look of a cedar, you might want to put some sort of matte polyurethane or something of that nature that will allow you to see the nice wood, but still help keep out the bees. It's not 100%, doesn't keep out the bees 100% of the time, but most of the time that will work.
How do you get the 7 dust into the opening?
It's
a two-story high structure.
You can put a little bit on a Kleenex, put it on the end of a pole, and dab it at the opening. We're talking about just a very small amount, you know, quarter teaspoon or even an eighth of a teaspoon is enough to kill off a carpenter bee and probably 10 or 15, maybe 100 of them. So it's so you don't need very much up there. Very small amount, so it washes away, reapply the dust. You want it to be dry because it attaches electrostatically to their hairs on their body.
Okay, and if you do it 1 year, do you have to do it every single year?
Only if you get the holes back. If you don't get the holes back, yeah, okay. Particularly if you go on ahead and do something to prevent the problem from recurring, such as varnish or paint.
If it's very high and very big, and do they go underneath the roofing on top of the structure that's cedar?
What they will do is they will make a hole in and then go up as much as 2 feet up the board, making a series of cells in which they raise young. So, yes, the damage is much more than what appears to be from the outside.
And you can't spray it with anything?
Sprays are going to be essentially ineffective unless you just happen to get lucky and hit the bee when it's coming or going.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We'll get one more here. Urbana, line three. Hello?
Urbana, line three?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Oh, hi. We have in our backyard a small ornamental pond about 3 feet across, and I'm afraid it is raising mosquitoes. I'm wondering if there's something non-toxic I can do to prevent them from living there.
Yeah, there's a couple things you can do. One is probably the best thing, the thing I like to do more than anything else, go down to your local bait shop, buy a dozen minnows, throw it in the pond, and you don't have to do it again until next year.
Hmm.
They will clear out all the mosquito larvae in that pond for the whole summer, as long as they stay alive in there. Bait minnows now run about $1.20 a dozen. You can't get any cheaper way to control mosquitoes all year long. There is also goldfish will also work if you wanted to have something that's pretty to look at. Koi are not, or carp, they're not going to feed on the mosquito larvae much.
It's a very small pond.
Very small pond. But like I said, you know, half a dozen minnows will keep them cleaned out. And what's sold in the bait shops are native minnows, so you're less apt to have an impact on the environment if they get loose. There is also a material called Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis, BTI. It's sold as little donut-like things in garden centers and some hardware stores that you can put in the pond, and usually that will, the bacteria will kill the, keep the larvae out for about a month. And you can repeat the process during the summer. That also works, and it's also toxic only to those, to little fly larvae like that.
Okay, thanks for the option.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it at that with the promise, I'm sure, another day Phil will come back. And in the meantime, if people have these kinds of questions, they can look in the phone book, look for their nearest extension person,
right,
and they should be able to help them out.
Yes, that's true.
All right. Thanks very much. Phil Nixon is extension entomologist at the University of Illinois.